The council will please come to order. Carly, could you call the roll?
Adams?
Here.
Leonard? Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Great. We will start with communications. Carly, could you please read item 221?
Request of Betty Jean Lee to address council regarding Transition Projects Access Center.
Ms. Lee, you're up first. And I, for all five people testifying, you each have 3 minutes to share with us your thoughts. And there should be a clock you can see that will give you a sense of how that's going. So welcome to City Hall. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Betty Jean Lee. I'm the regional grand executive of the Chinese American Citizens Alliance. The Chinese American Citizens Alliance is a 113-year-old civil rights, national civil rights organization to protect the Chinese immigrants from discrimination and other injustice in the United States. Our own Portland Lodge will celebrate its 87th birthday tomorrow, February 14th. We are certainly supportive of the homeless and what Blanche House, TPI, and other social service agencies have done in Chinatown. Many of our Chinese community grew up, lived, and worked in the neighborhood. My husband's family, with seven boys, being one. These are our roots. We more than understand the difficulties of living without secure food and shelter. Old Town Chinatown has also been the home of many other disadvantaged immigrant communities. Our concern is to have a balanced neighborhood in which people from all walks of life can thrive. We are looking for a diverse neighborhood in which economic prosperity, quality housing, and employment opportunities are available to all income levels. In the past, we have been known as a silent minority. We are now speaking out, as you can see here today, and demand adherence to transparent public processes and policies regarding land use and development so that everyone in the community can understand their options and a consensus can be reached. We must support Chinatown, located between Northwest 3rd and Northwest 4th from Burnside to Gleason, with strong anchor revenue generating businesses reaching out to all of Portland rather than siting a resource access center. Enhancement of existing human service agencies are fine, but we oppose any new siting of services, whether they are contracted with an existing agency in Old Town Chinatown or not. It is our sincere feeling that Block 25 is not large enough to accommodate the needs of both Blanche House of Hospitality and TPI. Members of our Chinese community worked 2 years with Brian McCarl when he built Pacific Tower. We worked 2 years on 3rd and 4th Avenue $5 million project. More recently, we worked on North Old Town Chinatown study. Many of us are board members of the Jewel of Chinatown, Portland Classical Chinese Garden. Help us make a diverse neighborhood and make one with economic prosperity. Let there be more bilingual communication with the city decision makers so that we don't feel that the city is not being transparent in the public process. Thank Great. You.
Thank you very much. Carol, could you please read item 222?
Request of Carol McCreary to address council regarding resource access center and housing on block 25.
Good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Carol McCreary, and I chair the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association. Neighborhood associations help the city involve stakeholders and manage the public process. Recently, however, I feel city commissioners have been operating outside of the proper public process. It seems that promises have been made about changes to urban renewal boundaries and the funding of specific projects. The sense of optimistic goodwill and cooperation and consensus that usually characterizes Old Town Chinatown is being exhausted. We haven't had the time to hear from all stakeholder groups, nor to bring recommendations made by our Joint Land Use Committee before the board or the full membership. On January 8th, the Neighborhood Association passed a resolution which recognizes the potential of Block 25 as an important development plot for Old Town Chinatown renewal. The resolution makes reference to PDC's North Old Town Chinatown redevelopment study, in which several of us here today participated before it was abruptly halted last summer. It simply asks that alternate proposals for placing the access center be seriously evaluated and reevaluated. I'd also like to bring to your attention the city's location policy, which is integrated in the Old Town Chinatown vision plan accepted by this council. It, quote, discourages concentration of low or no income households in any one area of the city. We'd like you to respect the spirit of this policy as you and other city or other organizations choose a site for the new HAP housing project. I'm really grateful that these representatives of key stakeholder groups in Old Town Chinatown, many of whom are celebrating New Year's this week, have the opportunity to be heard today. So thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you. Item 223.
Request of Richard Louis to address council regarding Block 25.
Morning, Mr. Louis.
Good morning. I'm Richard Louis, the president of the Chinese Consolidated Beloved Association. The CCBA is an umbrella organization that represents various Chinese families, businesses, professionals, and other organizations in Oregon. In December 2007, we were taken by surprise that a day-use center for the homeless will be located in a prominent block that is the North Gate to Chinatown. In the last 2 months, we have been struggling to make our voices heard and meetings. This is not the Chinese way. We are quite proud and humble people. We do not have a history of asking government for help. Now, as we approach the new year, we must speak out. We support our homeless citizens. Inside Chinatown, we currently have Union Gospel Mission, Outreach Missionary, Blanchard House, Cascade Royal Palms, with other close by. But now, in this year of the rat, we cannot support the proposed location of the homeless day use facility bounded by Northwest 3rd and 4th Avenue and Northwest Gleason and Flanders Street because it is detrimental to Chinatown's survival. Our neighborhood is at its tipping point. We need to bring an equitable balance to the community that houses many of our lowest income citizens and provides many social services. We need mixed income housing, business, and culture to bring people to live, work, and learn and shop in Chinatown. We need what every neighborhood needs, a balance and diversity of economic levels, achieved streets, active streets, safety and variety of housing of all income levels, and prosperous businesses. We know that many of our friends say the new facility will provide for those that are already in Chinatown, but we believe that the new day-use facility will draw new people from all over the city. It will prohibit development in this important block of Chinatown that has so much potential of what remains of Chinatown. Many years ago, we were forced from south of Burnside to this neighborhood. Now we're seemingly losing what remains. It is not right, nor is it honorable. Our elders are afraid to speak out because of harassment, segregation, and racial legislation against the Chinese in the past. They are afraid of government. It has taken a new generation to lessen this distrust. The younger generation is learning and participating. We are learning that we deserve a fair and public process. We are now expecting this form from the leaders of our government. Let us argue, let us disagree, but give us a respectful process. We cannot speak in meetings when we are not invited. We cannot speak in meetings held behind closed doors. Please invite us to your meeting. Please give us a public process for the location of the homeless day use facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Item 224.
Request of Lewis Lee to address council regarding Block 25.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Lewis Lee. I practice accounting in Chinatown. I want to first state the position that we are supporting right now. We support actually the Chinese community along with half a dozen groups, neighborhood groups. We support Blanchet House to remain in Block 25. We are asking Transition Project, Day Center, and Housing Authority of Portland to be located in Block U. I want to draw your attention to the maps that you have, page 1 and page 2. I want to say that how the Forgotten Peace Chinatown is conveniently swept aside in the public discussion under the label of Old Town. We support the economically disadvantaged, that being the poor, which is in itself a minority group. We also want people to think about another minority group that people normally thought of, the race, Chinese Chinatown. With reference to the map in Chinatown, in 5 blocks on your right-hand side with 4 service providers there, which is in the red. And that's the lineup that Chinatown is facing right now. And we are looking at an expansion of a super block on the, at the north end. And that is an overkill, which can push Chinatown to extinction. Other neighborhoods are keeping quiet because they stand to benefit by keeping their silence. Chinese folks ask for nothing more than fairness. I'm glad that the city established the Office of Human Relations. May I suggest that this be the first case that they look at? Chinese community in Chinatown made tremendous progress. We have, since the event of Royal Palm Hotel 15 years ago, the sighting of Mental Health Service West, we have actively participated in the neighborhood affair. We have made positive contributions, the garden and third and fourth. We are attentive. We are right at the gate when the things start. The neighborhood folks in Chinatown, Old Town, they understand all of these. And that's why they are proposing Block U as an alternative. You want, what they are trying to say is, you want my right arm, I offer you my left arm. I am asking the decision maker right now to progress same as the Chinese community by not insisting things to happen down in Block 25. Thank you.
Thank you. Item 225.
Request of Swen Ho to address council regarding Block 25.
Good morning, commissioners, and happy Chinese New Year. My name is Swen Ho. I am an urban designer. Since moving to Portland in 94, I've done considerable professional work in Old Town Chinatown and also served on the board of Transition Project, Inc. I believe that Block U is a good alternative for siting the TPI Resource Access Center. Old Town Chinatown is dear to me. This community has taught me that the key to a better future for this neighborhood is to honor, respect, and value cultural, economic, and social diversity. What is dividing the community is not intolerance. Rather, we need demographic balance and continued shared efforts to strengthen the heart of Portland. Portland is a city that is known for its progressive urban environment, a city that welcomes a healthy mix of bustling urban lifestyles. When the Royal Palm Hotel issue divided the community in 95, we painstakingly crafted a good neighbor agreement within the context of the Old Town Chinatown Vision Plan. This plan, adopted by the City Council in 97, included a location policy to ensure that new city-sponsored shelters and low-income facilities would not be concentrated in any one area of the city. That plan emphasizes the importance of a balance of social services and tax-generated development. The city and the community have long collaborated in visioning, planning, and building a distinct identity for this unique urban historic neighborhood that we all can be proud of. Investments such as the Classical Chinese Garden, Pacific Tower, Old Town Lofts, and the Streetscape Improvement Project are notable. Please build upon these projects, which deliver long-term economic return for generations to enjoy. Block 25 has a 350-foot height limit. It should be reserved for a landmark mixed-use development that is capable of activating the street life for all ages and hence maximizes return for the city. This kind of active street life quality is the essence of the city-funded streetscape improvement project. The siting of the access center at Block 25, this North Chinatown gateway, will compromise previous investments and the trusting relationship that has been nurtured between the city and the Chinese community. We must not upset the delicate balance that exists. An access center on Block U can utilize the block's lower height limit and proximity to transit. Block U can accommodate entities with entrances on different street levels. Block U can provide TPI with a full block footprint to keep Plan Shea House on Block 25, and the TPI access center on Block U allows for greater development flexibility for this wonderful neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. I might just take a moment and appreciate everybody coming in and share the process. Obviously, this is not a hearing, so I don't think it makes sense to try and share point counterpoints. It's just it's a communications. But PDC is meeting this afternoon, the Portland Development Commission. I believe they're going to discuss this, the status of this project. They have set over today's expected decision for 2 weeks until February 27th. We are expecting them to make a decision on February 27th. My understanding as of yesterday is that all of the parties are discussing Block U, and there seems to be some interest in that. There's a fair number of hurdles, as there is in everything, and as although I would take some issue with the description of the process to date, we did not look at Block U as part of the process because at the time PDC said it was not available. So that is, I think, a viable possibility, and I personally did not think about it because PDC said it was not available. So if it is available, I think that's certainly worth looking at it. I don't want to imply that's the decision that will be made. I think we either need to get a decision that's got enough agreement that people feel that we can move forward, or the council needs to step into this and set its own process because it's become quite contentious. And I think because of the unexpected and reasonable controversy that the process isn't clear. So I have held the time certain on February 28th for the council at 3:30, if necessary, to review the PDC decision if we get to a point where it's still controversial. And at that point, I would expect the council to step in and say, okay, here's the decision-making process, and either make a decision at this level and or set up another process. So I just wanted to hold it so that if it gets to something that the PDC cannot decide, that this council, you know, this really has risen to the level, I think, of a council decision at this point. So may or may not be necessary, but that's the process. So just a conversation of PDC, hopefully a decision, a recommendation by PDC on the 27th, and if necessary and hopefully not, a council hearing on the 28th. So just wanted to share that with everybody so that you knew where this was going from here, and thanks for coming down. I think we'll take the consent agenda. Does anybody on the council, the audience, have items they would wish to have removed from consent? Roll call on the consent.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye. We'll move to the regular agenda. Carly, could you please read item 239?
Authorize sale of sewer revenue bonds to finance the system improvements, fund bond reserves, and pay related costs.
Second reading, roll call.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye. Item 240, please.
Authorize an $88,434 grant to Campfire USA for after school programs in Centennial School District and East Portland.
Commissioner Leonard, did you want to say anything about item 240, Campfire?
It is a as we have been, unfortunately nobody's here, as we have been working out at Dodge Park to improve Dodge Park. We've done a lot of capital improvements. We have just recently gone through a land use process in Clackamas County to allow tent camping out there with the vision of Portlanders riding their bikes out the Springwater Corridor Trail, which will hopefully have a terminus at Dodge Park. We have been in cooperation with Camp Namanu, which is right across the river from Dodge Park, helping them deal over the years with a number of incidents of rowdy behavior at Dodge Park that has interfered with the program that Camp Namanu has, which is under the auspices of Campfire USA. As part of that effort, we're really pleased to help them meet their operating goals for the services that they provide Portland kids, and specifically Centennial School District Portland kids, at Camp Namanu in the summer. So this is the culmination of, I think, a renewed great working relationship the Water Bureau has entered into with Camp Namanu, its directors, and the services they provide, which we hope begins a new era in our working together. They haven't always been happy in the past with what's happened at Dodge Park. I think they're very excited about where we're going, and very obviously happy that the council has agreed to this grant to help them with their programs.
Okay, terrific. Would anybody in the audience like to testify on this? Nope. It's an emergency ordinance, so we'll take a roll call.
Adams?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Sten?
Aye. Could you please read item 241?
Approve settlement of claims with 360 Networks USA, Inc.
Commissioner Saltzman?
Well, this is good news. We're getting a settlement with 360 Network. David Olson from the cable office here is here to answer any questions if anybody has any. But this has been going on for a while, and I think the settlement is for roughly $1.3 million. $1.1420 coming to us from 360 Networks.
Has that been put into the forecast? Or?
No, it hasn't. So it's a
look at you.
Good news.
You're already spending it. We don't even have it yet.
Well, so, never time like the present.
That's true. Okay, and can you come forward, David, just so I understand this? It's more for my own education than.
Absolutely.
So they, what did they do that requires, or what didn't they do that has allowed us to extract a settlement from them?
Thank you, Commissioners. I'm David Olson from the Cable Communications and Franchise Management Office. With me is Ben Walters from the City Attorney's Office. this is a dispute that's not unrelated to the litigation we've had with Quest in recent years. This is another telecommunications franchisee that, on the basis of similar legal theories that we prevailed on in the Quest litigation, decided to stop paying in 2002, approximately. And those legal theories were contested by the city, and we have prevailed on all aspects of that litigation thus far. There are certain aspects of it that's in the Quest case that still exist in the Ninth Circuit, but we've really prevailed at all other levels. This particular company had asserted those theories in withholding payment from us, and what you have is quite a bit of an arrearage that built up since 2002 on the payments that were due, as well as some disputes over facilities that we really do rely on, both for our ERNIE system and our Bureau of Environmental Services. There are some facilities associated with this franchise that we use. So we worked very hard, and really congratulations are owed not only to the staff that worked on this. I'd particularly like to mention Dave Solis in our office, who was instrumental in assisting with this, but also the city attorney's office. We have a terrific team of city attorneys over there, one of whom is sitting to my right, and also Terry Thatcher. Settlement is always the best way because you avoid any potential risk of litigation. We're happy to bring this forward. It's a substantial arrearage. It's not in your financial forecast yet, but we're very happy to bring it to you and to help the general fund in that way.
And the obvious question is, why settle if we could get more money going to trial?
Commissioner Adams, Ben Walters with the City Attorney's Office. The settlement represents acknowledgement that there are some risks in litigation. There were some disputed amounts involved in the settlement. One of the aspects of this is that this was a company that shortly after acquiring the franchise from the former Pacific Fiber, the original franchisee went it directly into bankruptcy. And so some of the disputed amounts involved what was taken into bankruptcy and what claims we would or could have asserted against them for the amounts that accrued during the bankruptcy proceeding. There's also the uncertainties of delay. Litigation with Quest has been going on, now going on 6 years. We've been receiving payments from Quest during that time period, but 360 has taken the position that they're withholding the payments. So there's the time value of the money during that time period. We could have asserted interest, but whether the interest would have been the equivalent of the actual time loss, the opportunity loss cost for the city in not receiving the payments is something that to take into account. And then there's just the uncertainty of the outcome of litigation. We have, as David noted, thus far prevailed in the Quest litigation, but nothing is certain in this world, and there is a possibility, albeit small, that we could eventually not prevail. And so this gets us the money. It does, as David acknowledged, also resolve some other disputes that the city has with the franchisee. Under the original franchise, the franchisee was supposed to provide the city with conduit. That conduit is currently occupied and used by the city. There was some dispute between the city and 360 as to the city's ability to use that. This resolves this in the city's favor, which has its own financial aspects in terms of the city not having to go out and arrange for alternative conduit in place of what 360 has provided. So we think there's significant benefits to the city, and we do recommend that the council go ahead and approve the settlement.
And it's commensurate with the settlement for Quest?
It's commensurate with what we settled with Electric Lightwave for, where we're still in litigation with Quest. So far we've prevailed, and the court rulings have been in our favor, but we did settle previously with Electric Lightwave, another franchisee that had sued the city challenging the validity of franchise requirements, and this is commensurate with that settlement.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Is that it? Would you like to ask anything else?
Does Commissioner Leonard pay his utility bills on time?
I'd have to look into that.
I defer to the city attorney's office.
On that note, thank you. Would anybody in the audience like to testify on item 241?
I'm here to learn.
Not seeing anybody. It's emergency ordinance, so we'll take a roll call.
And it's an emergency.
Adams?
Yeah. I am tickled pink to vote aye.
Leonard?
And I know more about this than I ever wanted to, so I'm happy to vote aye.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank the David Olson, Dave Solos, and Ben Walters, in particular, for working long and hard to get us to this great settlement. And the million-plus dollars will be in the revenue forecast very shortly. Aye.
Sten.
I also want to say thanks and just to point out a small piece of, I think, maybe history for people to know is that Quest basically we're just going to outspend municipalities approach, that they weren't going to, they just decided not to pay the franchise fee and then basically made a blatant play that the legal fees didn't matter that much to them and knew they could essentially run out the clock. And I think Ben and his team with David's help did a masterful job working to win that lawsuit. And I also want to thank the Oregon League of Cities who actually joined us in the suit and went as far, which is pretty unusual, of having a special assessment on all members of the Oregon League of Cities to actually put more money into the legal fund. We carry the chunk of it, but every city in Oregon actually assessed itself to stand up to Quest on this. And I think we always knew that our legal strategy was solid, but there was some question as whether we could actually afford to get it all the way through the court system. And that was specifically Quest's strategy, was to bankrupt our ability to fight them. So, you know, and this $1 million that was improperly being withheld from the citizens follows on that strategy. So it's good work, and it shows how important this stuff is. So thanks, aye. That brings us to item 242, Carla.
Authorized contract with Compass Resource Management for $103,415 for consulting services to create a district energy system for the North Pearl District Development Area.
Commissioner Saltzman?
Thank you, Mr. President. District energy systems provide a central source for space heating and hot water, and potentially cold water for cooling. They have significant potential to help Portland's neighborhoods with increased energy security, fewer greenhouse gas emissions, and lower energy costs. The development of the Pearl District, north of Lovejoy Street, is a strong candidate for a district energy, given the magnitude of new development, infrastructure work that will be completed, as well as the proximity of industrial lands to the west. However, we do need a deeper degree of analysis to confirm the degree to which district energy investments can be justified. Through this contract, the city is engaging a consulting team to evaluate the technical and economic questions, to engage building developers, owners, and occupants, and to advise the city and the development community. This work will be completed in the next 3 to 4 months. An external stakeholder group of property developers, energy and green development experts, and neighborhood leaders will also help guide this process. And the funding for this comes out of the Sustainable Industries Initiative that the council funded in last year's budget. And with that, I want to turn it over to Tom Ostaba, who will give us a little more information on this exciting, potentially exciting project.
Thank you, Commissioner. Council, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Tom Ostaba, and I'm leading the Office of Sustainable Development's efforts in the Sustainable Industries Initiative, of which this is a part. I'll just add as well, I just want to make a few very brief comments about this project, because district energy is something new for the city, and as we go through this analysis, it'll be great for us to have a little bit of background with this. As you may recall, in late September, this project was identified specifically as one of the short-term initiatives under the Vision PDX efforts to look at advancing sustainability at a neighborhood scale. In this case, we're looking at the North Pearl District as the most compelling first place to begin this analysis. And our objectives are multiple, including environmental performance and the sustainable development goals within the North Pearl District plan, which is being put together with the property owners in the neighborhood. Also contributing to local energy efficiency and security, shifting away from high-value gas and electric heat to low-grade alternative sources for heating buildings, which has a substantial potential to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We're looking for also economic wins here as well in terms of a return on investment for the capital of a district heating or cooling system that reflects a market-style investment. And looking at cost of service comparable to what other alternatives customers would have. So we're really looking to provide for multiple objectives here. We issued the RFP in late October and went through a selection process to choose this consulting team, and it was a unanimous selection. It will be about a 3 to 4 month process for completing the work, which includes both a technical review of the questions around how do you create a distribution system, what are the right energy sources, how would you deploy them, what would be a schedule for doing that, as well as the economic and financial aspects of it, how much investment would be necessary, what sort of rates and the structure of those rates, how does that compare to what's going on, what are the opportunities for investing in new innovative energy technology, what are the carbon finance aspects that we'd want to consider around this, and so forth. We'll also then be able to have a fairly open and fully informed discussion about what the right governance and ownership structure should be for moving this forward. District energy systems are very common, but they're also quite challenging to build. So the initial development of a system is quite difficult, but once it's in place, it's a very good, sound investment, operates very effectively. And so we want to make sure we bring that discussion forward with full information about the costs and benefits that we'll see. Just to provide just a very quick background, status quo energy systems and what district energy would seek to do by collectively providing for heating and cooling needs. In the status quo approach to development, each building would be responsible for its own decisions. Generally, developers will install those. They'll tend to put in lower cost equipment. Oftentimes, buildings oversize their equipment at the same time because they never want to be in a position where they can't provide the service. So you have sort of double inefficiencies going at that level. Because developers are very sensitive to first costs, and that can be more a barrier to more efficient, longer-term technologies. So that's what we'll be looking at over the next 3 to 4 months, and we'll be back with a full
piece of analysis that will tell us what it looks like in terms of the technical questions, the economic questions, and what is the right way for the city to move forward. We could choose to move forward simply soliciting a private development partner to do this. We could have a different conversation about whether or not this is really best done as a public enterprise to at least develop and then potentially sell once it's established, or hold as a revenue-producing asset. But that'll be a conversation we'll be able to have with a full piece of analysis done. This just gives you a picture of the benefits we're trying to achieve here in terms of economics, environment, and social performance, and we're trying to make sure people have a good, solid understanding of their energy use choices and how it relates to issues that we're all aware of in terms of climate change and peak oil and rising energy prices. Given the current change that we've seen over the last several months in the real estate and development marketplace, I think there's going to be some very interesting analysis that we're going to have to take into account in terms of the pace of development, how fast that will be built, and whether you will actually then be able to provide revenues to justify a capital investment at the front end. That'll be a very interesting piece of analysis and will also force us to evaluate what's an appropriate initial service area. It could be that the area just north of Lovejoy in the Pearl District is the initial service area. It could be broader than that based on the ability to connect in existing buildings. Again, we don't know that. We also don't know exactly how well we'll be able to build out a distribution system if it's justified, or what energy technologies make sense. There's a wide spectrum of choices here, and that's what we'll be looking at. Certainly, if this can be developed as initial scale, I'm very positive that it will expand incrementally throughout the broader area adjacent to this area, because there is so much development there and existing development that we'll be able to reach out. And that's a very common practice once a district energy system exists, because it performs better. So I just want to provide that brief overview. I'm happy to answer any questions at this point. Otherwise, we'll look forward to seeing you later this spring.
Questions from the council?
Any idea of what size of conduits or pipings we're talking about? Or that...
Well, if I were to project out what we know of the anticipated development of just the North Pearl service area and the square footage, the kind of energy use that's going to be there, if there was a district energy system, it'd be a two-pipe system for heating, so hot water, one going out, one returning. Each would probably be in the neighborhood of 10 to 12 inches in diameter. If you did cooling as well, that would have another set of pipes. Potentially could be a lot larger because cooling is a little more tricky than heating unless you have a lot of demand for it.
So didn't we have something like this down in the John's Landing area that provided district heating that was removed in the last few years?
I think we had it in the downtown area.
Was this the same technology?
Yeah, it was specific. Power, I believe.
Yeah, I can't answer the question about John's Landing. I know that there was a steam-based system that served the downtown core.
John's Landing wasn't right. I meant the development down where the moorage is.
Waterfront. Yeah.
South Waterfront.
No.
What is it called?
It's where the old steam plant used to be. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
By the Macadam, by the
Alexis Hotel.
By the Alexis yeah.
Hotel.
Right. Yeah, that's a system that I think Pacific Power used to have and provided steam heat in large parts of downtown.
Right.
So is that the same technology as this is, or is this a different?
It's basically the same technology.
It's conceptually the same. Yeah. District energy systems have moved away from steam because it's not as flexible on your energy source. As if you're using hot water, it's a lot more efficient to use and cost-effective to use hot water as opposed to steam, unless you have a very specific use for steam. Where steam pipes still exist, you still use them, of course. But new systems are almost exclusively going to be water-based, and all of the efforts are to drive the temperature as low as possible because, again, you're trying to really create the opportunity to grab new innovative technologies that are a lower-grade form of energy than the sort of high-value fossil fuel-based or other sorts. So we'd be looking at that, but conceptually very much the same thing. And in fact, 2 weeks ago we had a meeting with OHSU about potential development of their new campus, and they're very keen to see us work with them to consider district energy for that development, which could, if it were viable, extend through South Waterfront, because that was designed really for a district energy system that wasn't built, but could easily be built there and could extend all the way up to Portland State. And they have a very small steam system for about five buildings in Portland State campus. So where we have these big densities of buildings and a mix of uses, both residential and business, we're likely to see incrementally moving more towards district systems for heating and cooling over the next 20 years. And our challenge is to make sure we can see that as an investment that provides a return, whether it's to private investors or to public investors. So
is the technology basically heat exchangers in the buildings that extract the heat from the water to heat
right.
the building and then extract the heat from the room?
That's exactly
the water when you...
That's exactly right.
So they have to have those kinds of technologies in each of the buildings.
Right.
For this, I see.
And
so
they,
we're not paying. So we're not actually paying for a fuel to heat the water that's delivered through the pipes. We're just circulating the water, and then these exchangers do their thing.
The short answer is it depends. A district heating utility often will own the heat exchange elements within each building, because that's something the building owners and occupants don't really want to worry about. They just want it to work. And so it extends right up into that piece. It's a lot smaller than them having their own boiler, so it saves them space in the building, saves them money. Where the energy comes from to create the hot water could come from anywhere. The sort of baseline analysis would almost always be to reference against a very efficient gas system, because you could easily do that. You could even rent one until you made a subsequent decision about what's the right ultimate technology. But from there, where the energy comes from could come from many different sources. It could come from groundwater or river water. It could come from heat recovered from sewer systems. It could come from waste heat that's captured from other nearby sources. So that's the analysis, is to find where can we really find those novel opportunities that really ratchet down greenhouse gas emissions as well as give us efficiency benefits at the same time.
The reason you're doing that is because the temperature of the water that's coming into the system is too cold, so you need to find another source of...
You just have to boost it up.
Boost it up.
Later. That's right.
I might add, we're fortunate that Tom Ostava was previously working for the City of Vancouver, British Columbia, on projects related to this, and they've made some real progress up there. So he came on board about the same time we were looking at this. So as you can tell, he has a lot of knowledge about this.
Interesting.
Great. Thank you very much. Would anybody in the audience like to testify on this item? I don't see anyone. So item 242 moves to a second reading, and the council is adjourned until 2 o'clock today.
Is that a filibuster?
Filibuster. That was close.
Oh, I'll show you, Phil. I was trying.